The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
All right. Welcome to a Friday, everyone. Oh, my goodness. What a week. And we are almost at the end of it. So we made it this far. We deserve some congratulations because, wow, this was brutal. Between Super Tuesday and all the defections and the Biden stuff. I don't know what else to call it. And the coronavirus and the just insanity that's going on. I'm so glad we're at the end of the week. We've got a busy, busy show for you today. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, the one and only Heather Digby Parton will be here to help us all make sense of the week that just, well, is ending. Elizabeth Warren dropping out and the everything kind of in flux. If you frequent social media and you happen to be a Bernie Sanders supporter, as I am, you know that it's a jungle out there, that people are just they're talking as if Joe Biden is the nominee. And all I can tell them is, you know, don't quit calling the ball game in the third inning. How's that for a sports analogy? I'm not a sports person, in case you didn't know. Anyway, we also have Jason Leopold coming up in just a couple of minutes. We're waiting for him to call in. So while we await word from Jason Leopold, who is at the center of a huge story that broke yesterday, I'll wait till Jason gets here to explain. But once again, the so-called FOIA terrorist strikes again. So I found this clip today in my online travels looking for something funny to open the show with. And the thing that's really astounding about it is not so much the funniness of the bit. It's humorous. It's okay. But the fact that the rest of the world is laughing at us, well, at Donald Trump, but us by, you know, default. Anyway, this guy's name is Kevin Bloody Wilson, and he's an Australian. And he has a little song here about Donald Trump. Enjoy. And just see how much the rest of the world is laughing at us. Okay.
World's most watched reality TV show, live from Washington, with a walk-on cast of thousands, starring Donald Trump. It's political, but it's not PC. There's drama, conflict, lust, head button, butt kicking, twists and turns, and lots of what the fuck.
Oh yeah.
What's Donald gonna do today? Are we doomed or are we safe? First thing I read is Donald's tweet. What's Donald gonna do today? Then I turn the TV on, checking up on Don. Is he pissed off or is he okay? What's Donald gonna do today? Oh, Donald. Oh, Donald. Oh, Donald. What's Donald gonna do today? He's a cross between Homer Simpson and good old Fred Flintstone. Don't need no help from no one. Fix this shit all on his own. Wants to build a wall to keep them Mexicans out. He reckons that's a great idea. Chinese built a wall centuries ago. Ain't many Mexicans over there. What's Donald gonna do today? Are we doomed or are we safe? First thing I read is Donald's tweet. What's Donald gonna do today? Then I turn the TV on, checking up on Don. Is he pissed off or is he okay? What's Donald gonna do today? Oh, Donald, oh, Donald, oh, Donald,
competitions with Kim Jong-un and Putin. Break for ratings. Donald wants to make America great again. Call him crazy, call him clever. But this daily reality dose of Don got us shitting our pants together. What's Donald gonna do today? Are we doomed or are we safe? First thing I read is Donald's tweet. What's Donald gonna do today? Then I turn the TV on, checking up on Don. Is he pissed off or is he okay? What's Donald gonna do today? Okay, what's Donald gonna do today?
Oh, yeah. All right. His name is Kevin Bloody Wilson. And he's Australian, in case you couldn't tell. Aussie. He's an Aussie. I can't do an Australian accent. Anyway, good stuff. Yes, somebody in the chat room asked if I will post it anywhere. What I've been doing this week, and I'll continue doing it if you want, I will post each day's funny on the blog where I post the podcast. So you'll find it after the show, about a half hour after we finish the live show, at NicoleSandler.com/the date. So today would be 3-6-20. Okay? All right. So Jason Leopold was supposed to be with us right at the top of the hour. He texted me just moments ago and said, can you give me 5 extra minutes? I said, I'll tell you what. You call me when you're ready, because he's busy. I know he's, you know, he lives in L.A. He's in D.C. right now, but taking time out of his busy day to talk to us because he's got breaking news. So I'll tell you what. We'll just go ahead with what's news. We'll do it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live. And when Jason calls in, we'll interrupt. How's that for a plan? Works for me. All right, let's do it.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
All right. So, it's been a busy week. And yesterday, Senator Elizabeth Warren announced that she's ending her 2020 Democratic presidential bid, essentially turning the race into a one-on-one battle between Senator Bernie Sanders and former Vice President Joe Biden.
I will not be running for president in 2020, but I guarantee I will stay in the fight for the hardworking folks across this country who have gotten short end of the stick over and over. That's been the fight of my life, and it will continue to be so.
So Congressman Tulsi Gabbard is still officially in the race, but having garnered only 2 delegates from her second place Super Tuesday finish in American Samoa, she has no path to the 1,991 delegates needed to secure the nomination. And although her 2 delegates should have gotten her entree into the next debate, which happens a week from Sunday, the DNC is once again changing the rule. Let's that is Jason Leopold calling. That was loud. Hello, Jason Leopold.
Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. It's been quite a 24 hours.
I'll bet it has. So Jason Leopold is with us. Told you he'd be calling. He's a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News. The government has labeled him a FOIA terrorist. We use that moniker with the utmost of affection and respect. And Jason, a note from Pisces Bobby in the chat room who says you are her hero. So I wanted to pass that along.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for sharing that. My pleasure. It's truly my pleasure. So I always get excited when I see a big news story break. And as happened yesterday with the headline, a federal judge slammed the attorney general for being misleading about what was actually in the Mueller report. And my first thought was, fuck yeah. My second thought was, I wonder if Jason Leopold has anything to do with this. And sure enough, this all came out of your FOIA lawsuit, yes?
Yeah, yeah. So this is a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit that I filed along with the Electronic Privacy Information Center, mm-hmm. Watchdog Transparency Group. We filed this almost a year ago. So right after the Mueller report was released, and if you recall, you know, it was released and it had a bunch of redactions.
Yes.
We wanted the report to be released in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. So we wanted the government to explain what they were redacting, why they were redacting it, and to do so in accordance with FOIA's 9 exemptions. So they could explain, you know, one, why a certain passage or parts of the document would be redacted. But we also did that because we wanted to challenge the redactions. Ultimately, what our goal was is to provide the public with a more transparent document by having the report released with fewer redactions.
Right.
So we filed a lawsuit against the Justice Department. And for the past year, we've been litigating this to try and get parts of the report unredacted. If you recall, the parts of the report that deal with Roger Stone is entirely redacted because at the time they were still prosecuting Roger Stone. Mm-hmm. So our goal was to ultimately get the report reprocessed. Anyway, you know, the government's been going back and forth into court to try to justify these redactions, to try to explain why this report was redacted. And we've been challenging them and essentially saying that, you know, we call into question the justifications that they're making for redacting this material. And, you know, the government doesn't have a very good track record when it comes to the Freedom of Information Act to begin with.
Right.
And in addition to that, in the past, they've already, you know, gone to court, they've lied, et cetera. So we got a judge, a federal court judge here in Washington, D.C., Judge Reggie Walton. He was appointed by President George W. Bush, who has just been very, very, very vocal about the fact that, you know, over the past several years since Trump has been president, that the government's essentially been going into court in these Freedom of Information Act cases and, you know, saying that they can't do anything or they're backlogged or they're too busy or the requesters are asking for too much information. And that's kind of rankled the judge. And last year, during several of our hearings, the judge had indicated that he doesn't really believe what the Justice Department is saying. He's essentially was calling their credibility into question and their integrity. And he said that he may be willing to take a look at an unredacted copy of this report, of this Mueller report on its own, and decide whether any material should be released.
Right.
And so he took that, you know, we had several hearings, he took that under consideration. And we made arguments. We made arguments about, you know, why Bill Barr is more or less untrustworthy, you know, as someone who can't stand up and say these redactions or this material that remains secret is justified when he's out there, one, you know, more or less acting as the president's own personal lawyer and intervening in various cases. So, you know, lo and behold, yesterday, again, we've been litigating this for nearly a year, the judge finally makes a decision and he releases a 23-page opinion that was just damning. I've never seen, Nicole, a federal court judge issue such a stinging rebuke of a sitting attorney general. I mean, this was just fire. And to watch the legal community, those who have served in the Justice Department, you know, former U.S. attorneys actually weigh in on this. It was amazing. And so basically what Judge Walton said was that Bill Barr is untrustworthy.
Yeah.
He has no credibility.
Wow.
He said that the decision by the Justice Department to roll out this report in such a speedy fashion, right? You remember that last year.
Of course. Right.
And the way in which he characterized it is that he said it, as far as public characterization of this report, quote, failed to provide a thorough representation of the findings. And that has led the court to, quote, question whether Attorney General Barr's intent was to create a one-sided narrative about the Mueller report. A narrative that is clearly, in some respects, substantively at odds with the redacted version of the Mueller report. The court cannot reconcile certain public representations made by Attorney General Barr with the findings in the Mueller report. The inconsistencies between Attorney General Barr's statement, made at a time when the public did not have access to the redacted version of the Mueller report to assess the veracity of his statement, and portions of the redacted version of the Mueller report that conflict with those statements, caused the court to seriously question whether Attorney General Barr made a calculated attempt to influence public discourse about the Mueller report in favor of President Trump, despite certain findings in the redacted version of the Mueller report to the contrary.
He goes
on to just continue to slam him. And, you know, he even said it would be disingenuous for the court to conclude that the redactions of the Mueller report pursuant to the FOIA, are not tainted by Attorney General Barr's actions and representations. And therefore, he wants to review the report on his own and make his own decision. So,
right. So is that the next step?
That's the next step. He's ordered the government to turn over an unredacted version of that report to him by March 30th, where he'll go through it. He'll read the report. He'll make the decision. I mean, we're not privy to it, right?
So we're not going to be,
we don't get to see it. But this is what we've wanted all along.
Sure.
We wanted a neutral third party, if you will, you know, to actually take a look at this. And we were very fortunate in getting a judge that seems to really care, or at least, you know, making it clear that he cares about the Freedom of Information Act, and he's not going to just, you know, take the government's word. When government attorneys go into court and say, you know, trust us, and he's saying, no, I don't trust you. In fact, I don't think you have credibility.
This is amazing, Jason Leopold. And the fact that this judge was a Bush appointee is extra important, not because, you know, I think that the majority of judges on the bench are partisan in any way. I think most of them are objective. They're judges. They do what they're supposed to do. There are a handful who are biased, and I think they tend to be the ones that Trump has appointed because he goes out of his way to find the most partisan hacks he can find to install on the federal bench. But the fact that this judge was put in by Bush, he's been there for years.
Right.
It's going to be harder for Trump to go, he's an Obama appointee. He's not there. He should recuse himself, which is, of course, what he says about any Democratic appointed judge who rules against him, because Donald Trump thinks that if he's the president, everyone should bow down at his feet, which is what I got last week. And that, you know, what happened the other day with Chuck Schumer mouthing off and John Roberts, calling him out. I'm wondering, where were John Roberts' comments on all the times Trump smeared judges from Lisa Berman Jackson, who was the judge in Roger Stone's case, to Judge
Amy
Berman Jackson. Right. To Judge Curiel, who he, you know, famously called out because he was of Mexican descent. I mean, this is Trump's MO, but he can't do that against this judge because he's got no ground. He doesn't even have a pretend ground to stand on, does he?
No, I mean, there's really nothing he can do here. I mean, and I think that, you know, with that said, the reality is that, sure, you know, he was appointed by Bush. He's a conservative judge. And that means nothing. You know, Donald Trump will find something, you know.
Yep.
I think what was really interesting to me yesterday, in terms of where the discourse is, at this point, is the fact that, you know, when I announced the news of this you know, of this, the judge's opinion, of Walton's opinion, that the immediate reaction from random people, okay, and, you know, just the public,
right,
is that, you know, this is just another liberal judge, as you said, right? That's not Trump saying it.
Right.
That those are people who are, you know, who are either Trump supporters or on the right. So it's the idea that at this point, you know, where we are is that, you know, if you are someone who is conservative, that you're actually not making a, you know, a legitimate rule of law argument or decision, that you must be politically motivated. And that is kind of a very sad reality of where we are at this point, because there's, you know, for many, many people, it's just, you know, it's black or white.
Sure.
And the thing is that I think what we've been able to do here, you know, is actually get something out that Congress hasn't even been able to do, which is to actually get a, you know, the judiciary to, you know, take the attorney general to task for what he has been doing, and recognize that what he's been doing has been, has the appearance of being politically motivated, you know?
Right, right.
And that is, like, at this point, such a victory. That we don't even have any documents, you know, it is just the
right,
the words of the judge itself in our case, which is a victory, you know.
Right.
And in
your piece, Jason Leopold, at BuzzFeedNews.com, you wrote, last month it was revealed that this same Judge Walton took Justice Department attorneys to task in another FOIA case, one related to a watchdog group's lawsuit to pry loose records about former Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe. You wrote he called the government's handling of it disturbing, a mess, and tantamount to what would happen in a banana republic. This is really encouraging, yeah, because it shows me that, yes, there are some judges out there, and hopefully a lot more than we know at this point, who do believe in the rule of law, who are in it for the right reasons, who doesn't matter what party they were appointed by, they believe in the rule of law. And that's, you know, as I'm watching the courts be packed with these partisan hacks, this has been my biggest fear for the last, you know, growing over the course of the last 3 years, that our court system is going to be so perverted by Trump's nominees and the ones that Mitch McConnell has pushed through the Senate that we're screwed. And this gives me hope. So thank you, Jason Leopold, because you brought it to us.
Oh, you're totally welcome. And I think that should give other people hope as well, you
okay,
know,
yes,
and I hope it does, is that it is, you know, there, everything is, we are looking through the lens of just everything is being politicized, and,
right,
and in many ways it is, right?
Yes.
We've seen it certainly most recently at the Justice Department.
Yeah.
You know, there's fears that the, you know, politicization has crept into, you know, the Centers for Disease Control, where people are not allowed to speak. And so, again, to have a neutral third party, at least, you know, someone who actually is on the bench and is supposed to uphold the rule of law,
mm-hmm,
doing so, is, you know, what a low bar, I think.
It,
you know,
is, but oh my God, it's almost freeing to know that, okay, there are still some adults in charge and that can hold these people accountable, I hope. You know, the question is, Bill Barr is the top law enforcement officer of the country, despite Donald Trump's claiming that mantle for himself. It's actually the attorney general. And so my, you know, one of the causes of my depression lately has been, who's going to hold him accountable? He's the top guy. He's, you know, he oversees the Southern District of New York. How are they going to get anything done with this guy in charge? But if there are still judges that have integrity and honesty and believe in the rule of law, then we have hope. And so that's a really good thing.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. And hopefully that's, you know, the start of something, that will perhaps change. And again, I think what is very, very important to take away from this is that there is a 23-page opinion. Mm-hmm. And the judge's opinion centers around our Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, right? And our lawsuit to try and shed light on a very, very important and at this point historical document that Robert Mueller put together. And at, you know, what we're up against is the government is saying that there are parts of this that you can see and that you can never see because it's there are a wide range of dangers that could result if we were to disclose anything. And a judge that's saying the behavior that the Justice Department has displayed and that the Attorney General has displayed over the past year is a cause for concern and is a cause for the public to doubt the integrity. And, you know, Bill Barr has only been the Attorney General for a year. And so what the judge did here is he put together, you know, these arguments. He explained why he is coming to these conclusions. And in terms of how he has been, his criticisms of Bill Barr. And in doing so, he started pretty much at day one when Bill Barr more or less had the job for just a few weeks at that point.
Wow.
So this is a really, really, really important opinion.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, what's noteworthy about it is that it doesn't go away. It's there. It's on the docket for pretty much forever. You know, and what is, I think, another important element of this is that other requesters, other individuals, other news organizations, other, you know, good government groups that currently have Freedom of Information Act lawsuits about Ukraine and about other things that are important that the public deserves to know about are going to be able to use this and cite this case when it comes down to calling into question, you know, the integrity and credibility of that Justice Department. And that's the damage, ultimately, that Bill Barr did.
Absolutely. And then, so this judge is going to get a hold of the unredacted Mueller report, be able to go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and release things that he believes should never have been redacted. Do you have any ideas of what we might find? Or are you just taking it one step at a time?
I don't, actually. I mean, I think there are still some things in there. Certainly about Roger Stone, we need that to be unredacted.
Uh-huh.
And I'm confident that that will happen. And I can't even guess at this point, Nicole.
Gotcha. Well, we wait and see.
I don't know what else to do there.
But I hope you're celebrating. I'm sure last night was a good night for you. Now, you're not even home. You're actually in D.C.,
I'm on assignment.
Total non sequitur of a question. How freaked out are you in flying across the country, and how packed was the airplane, or how empty was the airplane?
You know, when I came here, it was packed. It was sold out. I mean, every seat was taken. I'm not terribly freaked out, but I'm certainly far more conscious of, people around me. Mm-hmm. I think that it is absolutely a cause for concern, and I tend to be a very suggestible person. If somebody else coughs, I suddenly find myself coughing and trying to keep everything in check.
Yeah, I gotcha. Jason Leopold, congratulations again on another great job. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud to call you my friend. Again, when I see a big story
Thank
like
you,
this
Nicole.
And I just know Beautiful. That you're involved, I'm so thrilled. You deserve all the success and all the accolades that are being heaped upon you right now for the hard work you're doing. And it's a lot of tedious work, too, doing these FOIA requests. I've read some of the stuff that you both put out there and that you get back. And the fact that you have to go through, in many cases, thousands of pages of documents. I don't know how you do it, but I thank you for doing it.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I got to run because I got Digby coming up, but thank you for joining us today. I know you're busy. I really appreciate your time. And again, on behalf of all my listeners, thank you for your work. You're the best.
Thanks, Nicole. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, Jason. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
The awesome Jason Leopold. He really is. He's one of the like really, really good guys. I'm so happy for him because he's worked really long and hard to get here. If you want some interesting background on Jason Leopold, he puts it all out there in a book called News Junkie, and I highly recommend it. You can get it on Amazon as a Kindle book, as an e-read book. When I started reading it, I couldn't put it down. I read it in about a day. And I think David, the same thing. It's that good. It will astound you. It will probably freak you out a little bit because Jason holds nothing back and he's 100% honest about the ups and downs in his life. And boy, he got his shit together and he's my hero. All right. I promised you Digby would be joining us, so let's not wait any longer. And, let's get Digby on the line, shall we? Oh, I even have, hold on, Digby's got her own intro. Where are you, Digby? I got to find her intro. Where is it? There it is.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B, Digby.
Well, she's actually Heather Digby Parton. She's one of the OG bloggers at digbysblog.net, which is the new home for the newly updated and newfangled Digby's Hullabaloo blog. And you can also find her writing at salon.com all the time and occasionally here. Hey, Digby.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, you know, I'm glad this week is over because I don't think I could take another day of it.
Oh, my God. I know. I was just watching the cable news about the coronavirus, and I'm telling you, I don't think I'm leaving the house.
I know,
I'm pretty
right?
Sure I'm staying home.
I got to tell you, my kid, you met my daughter, Allison, and it was a few years ago.
Yes, I sure did.
Would you believe Allison is now 20? Actually, she'll be 21 in May. So my little girl is grown up, and she works. Oh. She does body piercing. And so
really.
And she does. She didn't go to college. My kid is very bright, but was a horrible student and hated school. And frankly, I couldn't afford to send her. And I didn't want her to go into debt taking out student loans for something that she wasn't sure what she wanted to do. And she hated school and wasn't into it. And so I said, you know, not everyone goes to college. And right now, you know, considering the way things are, it's probably not the smartest thing for her to do. She went out and got herself an apprenticeship to learn piercing, worked for free for a while living here at home. And I'll tell you, she out-earned me in 2019. We're doing our taxes now. So, you know, good on her. But she works with the public. And she just called me a little while ago. She's like, Mom, the place that we get our masks from won't sell us more than one box. And there's no hand sanitizer anywhere. Should I be freaked out? And I told her no. Again, if anyone's going to be affected in this house, it'll be me and David because we're over 60. She's, you know, 21. And anyway, she's freaking out, but a lot of people are. And I'm not. It's weird. I'm not. In fact, I looked at airfares and I saw right now they're really cheap to fly out to LA. So, you know.
Well, they are. Well, good for you for not freaking out. I, on the other hand, I mean, I can't say that I'm freaking out, but I'm very concerned. I mean, I'm concerned about what the ramifications of this whole thing are. And by the way, it's not because I don't, you know, I mean, I'm watching this and studying what's going on with this virus. And in fact, I've been following it as a writer since January when it first came up in China. And I could see that something very, you know, potentially catastrophic was developing there, and sort of I was writing on my blog about, you know, hey, look, everybody, keep your eye on this because this could get real in a hurry. But what bothers me is that, you know, we have, you know, we're the richest country in the world.
Yep.
We have every reason to believe that in a situation like this, our government will, you know, the federal government and the state governments and the local governments will coordinate, work together, and do everything possible to mitigate this problem, right? I mean, nobody expects that the world is always going to be, you know, perfect, or that we aren't going to face catastrophes, natural disasters, and certainly this idea of a pandemic is not something we haven't been anticipating. And in fact, we've had them. You know, we had the SARS pandemic.
Sure.
We had the H1N1.
Yeah, we had Ebola. You know,
exactly. Ebola came. But, you know, but I think that that we've always, as Americans anyway, had, you know, a great deal of trust in the American scientific community and the ability to at least be able to trust that these people were the people who know what they're doing would be put in charge and would be making the decisions and would be doing things that we could count on, would be, you know, at the very least, would be the best we could hope for, even
right.
if, you know, things go horribly sideways. Well, now we have, you know, we have Donald Trump for president. We have a government that's being run by someone who basically doesn't understand or even, it seems, believe in science. He has a vice president he's put in charge who we know doesn't believe in
that's
science.
Right.
He doesn't believe in evolution. He has a history of doing the wrong thing
yep.
in disease outbreak. And what is happening, what we can see happening, is that there's tremendous political pressure being brought to bear on the experts here to not be, you know, totally honest about what they're saying, and to always present it in the idea that Donald Trump is our savior, that he has been doing the best job. You know,
right.
you hear these experts, they
it's
get up, they go, thanks
insane.
To the tremendous leadership
yes.
of President Donald Trump, we have this. And what that's done is, you know how that is. There's a, it becomes, they don't have to say it. It just becomes the way people start thinking about it. We need to be careful about what we say. We need to make sure that we don't do anything to upset Donald Trump. We've got to, and certainly the people that are in the task force that's on there, you can see it. They struggle
oh, yeah.
to come up with words,
yeah.
you know?
To not it's offend a- him, to try not to contradict him when he contradicts everything they say.
Exactly.
It's pretty astounding. And I know that the task force put out a press release yesterday that was all about what a great job Donald Trump is
yes.
doing leading the country through this crisis. Oh, my God. No, he's not.
I mean,
first of all, he's lying to the American people. He's contradicting the experts who are telling us to be cautious, to be, you know, careful. And he's like, oh, they're going to go away. They're going to die out once it gets warm. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about.
He does not. I mean, this, but we know how stupid he is. I mean, this goes without saying. I mean, we've had 3 years of this.
Yes,
I mean, but here we are in a situation where his method, which is basically, you know, it's a PR strategy to any kind of a problem. I mean, remember, he did it in Puerto Rico, which
uh-huh.
really was a dry
oh,
run. You know, you remember he went down there and said, oh, we've only had 19 deaths, and isn't it terrific?
Yep.
And we came in and we solved it, whatever. Well, that was a lie.
Yep.
There were 3,000 deaths plus, and, you know, he didn't really get held accountable for
no,
doing that.
Not at all.
He didn't. And so now here we are. I mean, we could have seen the handwriting on the wall of what was going to happen if another crisis of that magnitude, and one that was national, which, of course, a pandemic is the perfect example of something like that,
right?
That we could see how he was going to behave. And, you know, he would be throwing paper towels, metaphorically, at the country.
That's right.
And saying, look, tell me how great I am. You know, that's essentially what he's doing. I mean, he is, and, you know, what you're seeing, I wrote on Salon just for this morning, and I've been writing about it all week, that, you know, they are giving out misinformation
yeah.
on Fox News.
Yep.
Rush Limbaugh
yep.
said it's the common cold.
Yep.
They've got Facebook stuff that's going around saying, don't worry, all this stuff is just crazy. Jesse Waters on Fox News said you just need to have the power of positive thinking.
Oh,
you shouldn't,
God.
You know, just think positively and the whole thing will go away. Well, you know, it's fine. You know, you're absolutely correct. But, you know, if you're young, like your daughter.
Yeah, she's fine.
And, you know, you're in good health. You may get it.
Right.
But it's not going to even necessarily
you.
Make you very sick.
Right.
And it's certainly unlikely to kill you. However, the way that this virus is being spread, and it's way worse, apparently, than H1N1,
mm-hmm.
the you know, apparently what they call it, and I can't remember the exact epidemiological term, but what it means is that your likelihood of spreading it to other people is much greater with this disease than it is than it was with the swine flu, which was deadly. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah.
This you can easily spread, and now that we know that people can spread it even though they're asymptomatic,
yeah,
and that they don't know they have
that's
it, and young
scary
people,
part,
you
right.
know,
yep.
that's the scary thing, because there are people out there, people over 60, people with health problems. You know, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why they're telling people, you know, be very careful, you know, take all these
precautions.
Be vigilant,
stay home, wash your hands, right, of course.
You know, I mean, to try and, you know, it may not be kill you, but it could kill somebody
it could kill me. I'm a 60-year-old, you know, lung cancer survivor down a lung. So I am probably one of the people at risk. But
well, you sure don't want to get on an airplane, Nicole.
No.
I'm just telling you. Right now.
No, I'm not going anywhere. I know. It's the way my mind works. I had to check out the airfares, but I'm not coming out anyway. No, I'm smarter than that. Usually, anyway. So Digby is with us. So yeah, so we're dealing with the coronavirus. This is it. It is ugly. It is scary. It's like nothing we've experienced. The stock market now still, it looks like it's down another 1,000 points or so. Let me just look at the latest. It closes in 20 minutes. Oh, it just came up a bit. It's down 547, but just 10 minutes ago, it was down almost 1,000. So,
yeah.
You know, and Donald Trump can try to make excuses and explain it all away. He hasn't got a clue how to deal with this, and he's just making it worse. And in fact, what we learned about how they acted when they brought these people back from Japan, from that cruise, on the same airplane with people who tested negative for it, and then had employees of Health and Human Services go see them and work with them without any protective gear and without any testing, and then they sent them all loose. They single-handedly spread this thing all over the country.
Yep.
It's astounding when you think of it how not only inept but culpable they are for the spread of this pandemic around the country.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, this makes heck of a job Brownie look like child's play.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, this is, and, you know, this is exactly the same kind of thing. It should be. I mean, you have, that's what basically Trump is saying every day when he goes on TV, heck of a job, Trumpy.
Yeah.
He's saying it over and over and over again. Look at me. Look how terrific I am.
Oh, it's so sickening. And that's what makes the news of this week's primary action even more depressing, because I don't understand what happened on Tuesday. Actually, I do. I think the Democratic electorate around the country is acting out of fear. It's all fear. This is what the Republicans want you to do. They want you to be afraid. And I think this massive pile on of endorsements for that. First of all, the dropping out 1, 2, 3 of candidates the day before Super Tuesday, and then they endorsed Joe Biden. It's all based in fear. And I'll tell you something, now I'm scared, because my fear is that if Joe Biden is the nominee, we lose again.
Well, I don't know. I don't make those predictions anymore. I don't have any idea. I do think people are fearful, and I'm not sure they're wrong. I mean, maybe their reaction to that fear is wrong, but feeling the fear of 4 more years of Donald Trump,
is
I can
legitimate.
Totally understand.
I'm afraid
that.
Of it.
And you know, yeah, I mean, maybe they're wrong in the decision that they're making as to who can win there. But I mean, that is what's driving the electorate, is this absolute terror that this guy is going to get reelected. Yeah. And for, you know, whatever their reasons were, I think a lot of people made the decision that Joe Biden was the better bet than Bernie Sanders. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, as I'm sitting here looking at this and I think about all the people who were running, the fact that we've got two 78-year-old men running for the presidency at this point, I just don't know what's going on there. I mean, I will never understand this, because, you know, this is the Democratic Party. It just there. They've got a lot of young talent. It was a great bench. I would have loved to have seen some of these other people who were there do better. And the fact that we wound up with two old guys like this, and I don't mean to sound ageist.
I know,
I'm old myself.
But I got you. So, I'm with you. I understand. You know? And that's what scares me. That's why I actually went online the other day and I said, I am calling for both Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders to announce as soon as possible who their running mate would be.
Because God, yes.
I think God. Unlike any time in our history, the VP pick in this year, in the year 2020, it's more important than it's ever been in the history of the United States.
Of course it is. Absolutely, I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, you've got both. I mean, Bernie had a heart attack.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sorry, but he did. And, you know, that he's at 78, that's meaningful. I mean,
yep.
It's always meaningful
yeah.
to have a heart attack, but especially if you're 78 and you're taking on the most stressful job in the world. Absolutely, they need to. And Biden, he's ancient too, and showing it in
he's
a million
showing
different
it
ways,
in different
so, you
ways,
know.
Right? Because his yeah. cognitive abilities, the you know, they call them gaffes. I'm sorry, I could be nice and call them brain farts, but it sounds to me like he's losing his mental dexterity, like he just doesn't have it. He couldn't remember all men are created equal the other day. He couldn't get the line out. And he said, oh, you know how it goes. This is happening
well,
on a daily basis, though.
Can I just be blunt about this?
Yes.
He's never really been that sharp.
Well, there's
I mean,
true.
I don't
true.
Know that this is age, if you know what I mean.
I hear you.
He's always been a little bit on the confused side, as my recollection of
yeah.
him is.
And what?
You know, look, I mean, he is certainly not my, you know, not my top choice. But I do think that whatever happens, whether it's Bernie or Biden, you know, I mean, I would have hoped that maybe we could have someone else in there and, you know, had great hopes for a number of people that were running. And, you know, I'm not, you know, part of the Bernie movement from 2016, not that I didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've raised a, you know, a boatload of money for Bernie
yes,
over
you
the
did.
Years.
Yeah. But
you know, I'm not, I don't consider myself part of the Bernie movement necessarily. But you know, I'd be perfectly happy to have him as president. He's a, you know, obviously, you know, a decent, intelligent, you know, capable person.
Yep.
So it's fine with me. But you know, I think at this point, you know, this is where we are, that we're, you know, one of these two guys is going to be it. And, we're going to have to figure out a way to get around this, you know, whatever the impasse is within the Democratic Party. And I'm, you know, I'm hope, I don't know which one of them has the better capability of doing that. I think they both have a problem doing that. And that's kind of scary to me, because I really don't want to have, you know, there's a feeling to me in this Democratic primary electorate that maybe, you know, there's a lot of us, and I include myself in this because I get involved in all this kind of internecine, you know, Democratic, liberal, socialist, progressive warfare.
Right.
That, you know, we're fiddling while, you know, fascism looms.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got to be prepared to do what is necessary to get, you know, to deal with Donald Trump. And then, you know, once that happens, whether it's Bernie or whether it's Biden, you know, I think the fight goes on. And, you know, we have to, whatever our belief system is on that, and that, you know, I'm of the left just as you are, I want to see all these things, you know, like Medicare for All,
yes.
and, you know, and all that stuff. We're going to have to fight like hell either way, whether,
true.
You know, even with the leadership in the White House, if it's Bernie, you know, he's going to be up against
Congress.
You know, he's got a Congress to deal
right.
with.
And absolutely.
And even, you know, among Democrats, it's going to be a hard sell, much less, you know, what the Republicans
right,
are like.
Right, I do. But,
and, of course, the same thing with Joe.
Right. But here's my thing, Digby, with Bernie and people going, but how is he going to pay for it? He can never get anything through. The difference is Bernie Sanders, I believe, will go into office with the intention of fighting for all of it, knowing he's not going to be able to get everything, knowing he may only get a small fraction of it. But the fact is, he's going to go in trying to get all of it, all the things that he's been talking about for all these years, which to me is a whole lot better than saying, no, we can't. It's like Elizabeth Warren said in one of those early debates. I'm sitting here listening to all these people telling us why we can't do the things we need to do.
Well, of course, you know, that's the progressive point of view, which is, you know, you got to go out there and swing for the fences. And then, of course, those of us who've been around a while understand that you can't always get what you want. You know, even
sounds
you know,
like a good song.
Donald Trump's theme song,
yeah.
which it literally is.
Right.
But, you know, that you're going to have to, you know, you have to at least go out there. I mean, to me, you know, the argument in all of this isn't really about, it isn't as much ideology as it is the a theory of how politics in America works now. And I think that what you're talking about is that you're saying you have to go for maximal pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come in and you just go for it, and you know, you push as hard as you can. You bring together your coalition and you fight the other side with
Absolutely.
Everything you have.
Yeah.
That I think is a lesson that we all took from watching the decade of the Bush administration and then Obama, in seeing that, you know, look, you're not going to get anywhere by trying to operate in good faith with opponents who do not operate in good faith.
Exactly.
So you've got to go in there with the intention of fighting up front. You don't, and there's no margin in sort of trimming your sails on that, because they're not going to operate in good faith no matter what you put out there. You just have to win. So you might as well fight for what you truly want, fight for what you believe in, and then, you know, and then at least you're operating from a position of strength, and you can summon your troops, whoever they are, in the Congress, or maybe it's the public, or whatever you think, and to get something done. But it's never going to be, I mean, we're the idea that somehow or another, you know, I mean, even if they take the Senate, which is possible,
mm-hmm.
you know, it could happen.
Well, I hope
but
it
even
should.
If they take the Senate, you still have, you know, you still got
Joe
you know,
Manchin.
You've got Democrats who are problems.
Exactly.
You've got Mitch McConnell is not going to, you know, he's not going to lose his seat, okay? So, you know, even if he's the minority leader, you think there is no group that is more effective in the minority than Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
They are really, really good at that.
Yeah,
so
they're a hell of a lot better
at fight those people.
They're a hell of a lot better at it than the Democrats are. For some reason, when
oh
the
my God,
Republicans
yeah.
are in the minority, they stop the Democrats from doing things. The
yes.
Democrats have been, you know, confirming these judges, have been allowing all of this shit to happen where, you know, one, I believe, unless they've changed the rules, one senator can hold up anything. And they're just not availing themselves of that opportunity. Where I have no doubt the Republicans would.
Absolutely. And they're, even if they lose, look, there's a way that Republicans lose that it turns out to be a win for them, right? They're inevitably losing, and in the same way, pushing their beliefs, shoring up their base, doing things, making that a contentious issue, even when, you know, even when they've lost, they turn it into a battle that somebody
yep.
had, there's blood and teeth on the floor, as Elizabeth Warren said yesterday. They turn it into that. And that is a value in a political situation. You know, you want to make the price high, even if you lose.
Of
you
course.
Want to make the other side pay.
Right.
And that's something that the Democrats just don't do. All these judges, they just sail through. People aren't even aware that it's happened.
I know.
They don't even know that the makeup of the courts, I think Trump has, what is it, has he replaced one-third of all the judges? It's
probably.
Something like
and
that.
Part
it's
of the problem is,
number.
It's not even that he's replaced them. There were so many vacancies at the end of Obama's term
right.
because Mitch McConnell kept holding up all the confirmations.
Exactly.
He wouldn't put anyone through, and he held them open just like he did a Supreme Court seat.
Yep.
The Democrats, you know, first of all, if I don't think they have it in them to play dirty like that, but they can't, they're not even protecting us from that kind of dirty pool.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I mean. I think this is, you know, we're not talking about ideology
Mm-mm.
here as much as we are talking about a theory of politics in 2020. And it's been this way for a while. It took the Obama administration 6 years before they actually woke up one morning and went, hey, you know what? These Republicans, they're not really operating in good faith, are they? You know, and we're all sitting out there. We've been screaming for years. You know, why are you dealing with, you know, Mitch
right.
McConnell
they're not
or
gonna
Paul
play fair
Ryan
with you.
Like
right.
they You know, you're not going to get a compromise out of these people. They're not playing the same game that you're playing. It's some relic of the past. And that's, I think, what the real argument is. Certainly we have ideological differences within the party, but I think really it's this idea of how do you approach politics? How do you go about it now in this current circumstance? And so, you know, when you say that Bernie's going to be that, even if you don't agree with him ideologically, I think a lot of his appeal comes from the idea that he's not going to play that game. He never has. And not to mention that I just, you know, his understanding and his campaign's understanding of the kind of, and you know, and he does say this all the time, you know, about, you know, Donald Trump is the most dangerous president in history.
Yes, he
has no problem, you know, naming
mm-hmm.
that. and that he's not going, you know, that they are not going to go into it with a theory of how to get what they want done in the way that it's been done in the past, because that doesn't work. So, you know, we're at a point where we really need to try something different.
Right.
And I don't know whether or not it'll succeed. I mean, there's no guarantee, but we know that it won't succeed doing it the other way.
Exactly. And we know that he's going to fight. Someone online the other day said to me, so you think but Bernie Sanders is going to be able to, you know, get Medicare for All through? And I said, well, at least he's going to start out trying to. And if we wind up with a public option, well, that's a step in the right direction. But when you start out like President Obama did in negotiating the Affordable Care Act, and you give away the notion of a public option before you even start negotiating, you don't get it that way. You get it by fighting for more, and then you compromise a little bit to get something better than what we have now. And that's what I believe we would get with Bernie Sanders, is at least a fighting chance to make things better rather than, you know, giving away the farm before the first egg is laid,
right,
to make a bad
pre-compromising
analogy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Right. Well, I get that. And I think, you know, I mean, you know, we're going to see how this plays out. It's a tie right now, essentially,
yeah,
you know, between
the two of them. But if
you
go online,
you know, it can go either way.
Again, if you go on social media, oh my God, you would think that the primaries are over and Joe Biden is the nominee. And not only on social media, but if you turn on cable news, they're all talking as if it's a done deal. And it's like, hello?
It is not. And in fact, I mean, this is one of the things that got me, you know, everybody being all shocked on Super Tuesday. I have to say, I was not. And here's the reason, is that, you know, for the last year, actually year and a half, the two front runners for the nomination were Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. It's moved a little bit back and forth.
Yeah.
Bernie was up, Joe was down. You know, there were some wins in the beginning. You know, Bernie does better in caucuses. We knew that.
Yeah.
And Biden kind of tanked in New Hampshire, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we had this sort of churning in this thing. But really, that was always the race.
Yeah.
And what that race is between the progressive wing as represented by Bernie Sanders, and the mainstream moderate wing, which is represented by Joe Biden. And that was going to be the argument. It still is. It's tied. The race is completely reset back to where it was always going to be between the two of them. And now we're going to see what happens. And, you know, I mean, I think I'm going to trust the voters, you know, that I'm not going to second guess what people are doing either way. You know, I think that everybody wants to beat Donald Trump, and that we all have our own theories of what that's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't strike me as being anything. I mean, I'm the only one I know who's saying this, you know, kind of like, no, I'm not surprised. Biden, Bernie, of course, that's where we were always heading.
Right.
You know, so here we are, and we'll watch this thing unfold, participate. You'll be voting in Florida, I assume.
Oh, I already did. our primary is a week from Tuesday, but I already voted, and I voted for Bernie.
Oh, you voted, yeah.
I already voted, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I already voted here in California, and, you know, we're going to see where this thing ends up. And then, you know, I expect that everybody's going to do their thing. It could get pretty wild. I mean, I don't think, you know, it's tied, right?
I mean, basically, I
think Biden's got a few votes ahead, but it's, you know.
But California, all the results from California aren't in yet, and there are more outstanding than separates them. So it is about tied. And so I caution people not to play like it's over. We're in the middle of primary season. And again, I'm not a sports person, but you can't call the game in the third inning. And that's where we are.
And I am so against that. And I'm not, you know, for me, I didn't think anybody needed to drop out. It was fine with me if Warren stayed in. It was fine with me if the rest of them, you know, all of this. I've never been one to say that. I think people have to have a right, if they have voters that have voted for them and that believe in them, that they have a right to stay in if they want to. And, you know, everybody did their own thing on that regard. But now that, you know, it's these two, I think it's just like I said, this is the progressive wing versus the mainstream wing. And we're going to see how that plays out. And it's not just far from over. We're starting right now.
That's right. That's right.
This is the beginning. So that's really how you have to look at it. So fight for your guy. You know, fight for your guy. If you believe in Bernie and you want him to win, then, you know, you got to fight for him. And those who think that Biden is the best, then, you know.
Fight for him.
Go for it. And
go
maybe
for it.
Someday we might even be able to find somebody to run who isn't, you know. foot in the grave. Right. I mean, I that would be kind of cool. You know, I mean, both Biden, Bernie, Bloomberg aren't even baby boomers. They're older.
No, they're before the baby boomer generation. I know. I'm feeling old because I'm at the end of the baby boomers, but they're not even boomer. I don't know what they were. The greatest generation, or I don't know what they were called.
They're the silent generation, but neither one of those guys is silent. Let's not, no doubt about that.
That's very true. Digby, as always, it is always a pleasure. Find Digby on her blog. The new URL to get there is digbysblog.net. And of course, you find Digby at salon.com as well. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I so cherish your expertise.
Nicole.
It's always great to talk with you. Have a wonderful weekend and, hang in there.
You too.
Okay. Bye.
Don't go out.
No, I won't. Thanks, Digby.
Bye.
All right. Well, we've run a little over and I never did get to the rest of the news. So you know what? We'll just run a little longer so I can share with you the rest of what's news. But we'll do the recorded version, okay? And I'll leave you after that. So have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Thank you for listening. Take a deep breath, regroup, do something fun, do something that gets your mind off of politics. I'll be out helping people and dogs meet at the Broward County Shelter. Volunteer. Do something that helps your heart. It's what recharges me every week to be able to come back here and do this. Thanks again, everyone. See you next week. Bye.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Senator Elizabeth Warren announced on Thursday that she's ending her 2020 Democratic presidential bid, essentially turning the race into a one-on-one battle between Senator Bernie Sanders and former Vice President Joe Biden.
I will not be running for president in 2020, but I guarantee I will stay in the fight for the hardworking folks across this country who've gotten the short end of the stick over and over. That's been the fight of my life, and it will continue to be so.
Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard is still officially in the race, but having garnered only 2 delegates from her second-place Super Tuesday finish in American Samoa, she has no path to the 1,991 delegates needed to secure the nomination. As for Sanders and Biden, both candidates are gearing up for next Tuesday, as 6 states will hold primaries or caucuses, with intense focus on Michigan, a key general election state that has 125 delegates up for grabs. Sanders' team announced that instead of holding a rally in Jackson, Mississippi, he will instead be campaigning in Michigan, the only swing state contest next week, on Friday and Sunday, going all out to win there in what has become a must-win contest. Sanders eked out a victory over Hillary Clinton in Michigan in 2016, taking the state by 1.5 points. A federal judge on Thursday criticized Attorney General William Barr's handling of former special counsel Robert Mueller's report on Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election, saying Barr, quote, distorted the findings when he first described them to the public. U.S. District Court Judge Reggie Walton, the D.C.-based judge overseeing a lawsuit brought by BuzzFeed News and the watchdog group Electronic Privacy Information Center, ruled that he would review an unredacted version of Mueller's report to evaluate inconsistencies that he saw between Barr's public statements last year and the partially redacted version released to the public. Walton said the discrepancies led him to, quote, seriously question whether Attorney General Barr made a calculated attempt to influence public discourse about the Mueller report to help President Trump. Jason Leopold, the intrepid BuzzFeed News reporter who brought the lawsuit, is one of my guests on Friday's edition of The Nicole Sandler Show, heard on Progressive Voices at 5 p.m. Eastern or available anytime after at NicoleSandler.com. The Senate on Thursday passed a more than $8 billion spending package for fighting coronavirus in a 96-1 vote, sending it to the president. By the way, that one no vote was Rand Paul. The House approved the bill on Wednesday, which includes $2.2 billion to help local, state, and federal agencies prepare to respond with testing, infection control, and tracking contacts of people who test positive. There are now 228 coronavirus cases and 14 deaths in the U.S. Pentagon officials said efforts to develop vaccines may not be quick enough to wipe out the virus before a second wave hits next winter. Meanwhile, members of the union National Nurses United said they have faced shifting guidelines and a shortage of supplies as the tally of known coronavirus infections has increased. The nurses called on the Centers for Disease Control to quickly increase testing for COVID-19 and demanded that federal officials implement emergency standards for hospitals and clinics around the country. Bonnie Castillo of National Nurses United shared a letter from a nurse currently in quarantine after caring for patients with the virus in Northern California and showing symptoms but cannot get tested.
I volunteered to be on the care team for this patient who we knew was positive. I did this because I had all the recommended protected gear and training from my employer. I did this assuming that if something happened to me, of course, I too would be cared for. Then, what was a small concern after a few days of caring for this patient became my reality. I became sick. When employee health told me that my fever and other symptoms fit the criteria for potential coronavirus, I was put on a 14-day quarantine. Since that criteria was met, the testing would be done. My doctor ordered the test through the county. The public county officer called me and verified my symptoms and agreed with testing. But the national CDC would not test me because if I were wearing the recommended protective equipment, then I wouldn't have the coronavirus. What kind of science-based answer is that? What a ridiculous and uneducated response from the department that is in charge of our country's health.
Of the 6,500 members who took a survey by National Nurses United, only 30% said their employer has sufficient protective equipment. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 970 points or 3.6% on Thursday in the fourth straight roller coaster day for Wall Street. The Dow opened Friday morning down another 700 points and continued falling in early trading as the instability is likely to continue. The state of Alabama Thursday night executed Nathaniel Woods, a man convicted in the 2004 killings of three police officers who were shot by another man. Supporters, including the son of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., waged a last-minute appeal to stop the execution as the case drew national attention. Woods' co-defendant, Kerry Spencer, who is now on death row, has confessed that he was the one who pulled the trigger, saying that Woods was innocent of the killings. I got the And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com. Please click on that donate button.